The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Yeah, now I'm joined in the studio by Coleman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist, to help deal with all your parenting issues. And if you have any queries for Coleman, you can text us to 51551 or our email address is ray@rte.ie. How are you doing, Coleman?
Good, thanks, Ray. How are you?
Yeah, good. How's it out there? Because we're down in the bunker. Has it started raining or anything?
No, still nice.
Still nice. Still nice. Yeah. Okay, let's get straight to it then. We got loads in for you. First one is this. I'm at my wit's end with how to get my kids to eat vegetables. They are 9 and 11. I am vegan myself, so I cook two dinners, one for me and one for my husband and children. I have to leave the vegetables out of the kids' portions. The 11-year-old girl eats fruit and some veg if it's raw, but the 9-year-old boy won't eat any fruit or veg. I would love some tips on getting veg into their diets.
Yeah, this is common. I mean, it's surprising how much I'm always interested in why people think this is a psychological problem.
It's not.
I remember being kind of trolled on Twitter of, oh my God, we need psychologists to teach our children how to eat. And, you know, there's some truth to that. I think I would take a traditional view with the diet stuff. I think, you know, we've become coconut oiled in terms of our concentration on getting the right nutrients into children, etc. And I would be a bit of a philistine. I don't believe in cooking menus. You know, you cook one dinner for the family. Now,
Yes.
But I know parents who will have a selection of different to quench each child's appetite, and there's seven pots on the go. I would be a traditionalist in saying I wouldn't go down that road, because once you start that, it becomes really difficult to undo it. So when it comes to the food and getting the food into the diet, I would say, you know, of course we can smuggle vegetables into things through, like, obviously fruit can get in smoothies, and we can try a stew or some sort of a pasta thing. I find this interesting. The only reason I don't want to cause a Twitter upset here around the veganism piece, but I wonder if mum's emphasis of this being such an issue is creating the issue. No, I don't mean that in terms of what I'm saying is I think sometimes children see our parents as something that, like, oftentimes the children who I would see would have food issues. Oftentimes mum is very proud in her cooking preparation, and they see it as a power control issue that actually I can refuse this. And from toddler age, food refusal is a kind of, it's a mechanism of control. I don't have to eat what you have to eat. So when children don't eat, we get alarmed that they're sick or there's something wrong. But even a toddler will close their mouth, shake their head and refuse food. So it's a way of exerting a little bit of control. And if mum is absolutely focused on vegetables and getting vegetables into them, this 9-year-old boy who's refusing to eat any vegetables whatsoever may be enjoying the power dynamic of that.
So that's the theory behind it.
Yes.
So how does she...
I would make less of an issue of it. Try and dilute the intensity, not make it the focus, try and smuggle the stuff in. And actually, if you make it like, I'm not all that bothered that you don't do this anymore, I think they will all grow out of it. You know, there's very few, I don't know, maybe I'll get a contest of listeners coming in of 20-year-olds who don't eat their vegetables. From the point of view, we all kind of find a way of doing that. I think our obsessive sessions around nutrients and getting those things into people creates anxiety. Anxiety is the worst thing you need at mealtimes. Stress-free mealtimes, much, much better. I wouldn't be cooking menus and preparations of all the different diets, but I'd smuggle it in. I'd pretend it's not an issue to me, try and hold back my own level of anxiety and see how it goes.
Okay, myself. That's good advice. Now, I don't know how many times you're going to be in here over the years, but I'd say we're going to get a phone or a technology one every time, if not two or three. My 15-year-old son refuses to study for his junior cert, won't give off his mobile phone until 2 o'clock, won't get off his mobile phone until after 2 o'clock each morning. We try to remove it at 11 o'clock, but it's like taking drugs from a junkie. What do we do?
Yeah, I think we may get these questions, but I think there are many varieties to questions, and it's huge for families. Like, the stress that this causes in terms of arguments and rows is massive. This 15-year-old boy refuses to study for his junior cert. I've been doing this 21 years, and I have not worked out a way in which you can make a child study. All right, it is, again, comes down to you can lock them in rooms and you can keep, and the books are there, but you can't do it for them. And I think I've seen parents pull their hair out trying to motivate a child who won't study. And traditionally it's teenage boys who they're struggling to try and get them to study. And almost driving yourself to distraction does no benefit because it becomes a nagging issue. The child has to motivate themselves. You have to. Now, how do you create that motivation? I guess by support and trying to emphasise the importance of it. But it's the one thing you can't make someone do is learn.
But the mobile phone is a distraction.
The separate issue here is the phone.
And the fact that on the phone till 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. So even if he had the inclination to study the next day, he's going to be too tired to do it.
Again, the phone is a weapon of mass distraction. And the children who I see are saying, I can't actually study with a phone in the room because it's far too tempting. The seduction into checking something. We saw the documentary last Thursday.
Yes.
Really interesting. But there was a really good, interesting opening few minutes of the school in Kilcock.
Where
they spoke to these group of young people and they were talking about going to well into the night time during the week and right through the night at weekends checking the phones, and they'd come out from a half an hour meeting or when they were meeting the researcher and had 36 to 48 messages on their phone. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, to be able to be plugged in to that extent, these children are under pressure to be available for response, and oftentimes the anxiety and the drive to hold onto the device is the pressure to respond, to be available. So, you know, that like nobody wants to be up till 2 a.m. in the morning, but I think a lot of these young people feel they have to be. You know, there's an important
the fear of missing out.
The missing out is one thing, but also not being able to be present in the moment for someone. So a lot of young people might be in a relationship with another peer who's struggling with, perhaps it could be something serious like self-harm or something, and you're my go-to person. I need you on a hotline for me. And, you know, I might text you at 2 a.m, but I want you to be able to be there to respond. Right. And there's kids carrying the weight of this pressure of friends in need or whatever it might be. And with the fear that if I'm not there to respond, then our friendship will break down. So obviously sometimes we think, you know, kids and their devices, they're doing some rubbishy gaming thing or they're doing something unimportant. But oftentimes it's a need to be on or a feeling of a need to be on rather than a choice.
Well, what advice do you have though for, because, you know, I've read loads about this. I've listened to loads of people giving various advice and I would imagine parents are just at a loss as to what to do.
Yeah.
There's no silver bullet, is there?
No, there's not. Buying a device for your child is like buying a puppy. The work only starts there. Do you know what I mean? In terms of management of it. And, you know, we regulate children's activity all through their life. Like, emotional regulation is the key task of adolescence. So the child who has a tantrum in Tesco's when you don't buy them buttons at a year and a half and screaming on the floor, by the time they're 20, you've hoped they've grown out of that. You know, so over that time, they've learned to regulate sleep, regulate appetite. We regulate all these things for children. The same has to be done for technology. And for some reason, we don't do it, or we can't do it, or we find it very difficult to do it. This lad having a phone till 2 a.m. in the morning is doing his mental health no benefits. Even the lack of sleep alone, irregardless of what he's doing on that phone, he's not able to function the next day. So when you're trying to remove it, it's like the junkie reference here, like taking drugs off a junkie. That's the phrase the mum used. I mean, it's a lifeline. Like, you're taking something that I need, and the capacity for you to remove this from me might mean that I have friendship collapse. I have all these collapses.
So are you saying just like we learn to regulate sleep, food, all of those other things, that it'll just come?
It won't come of itself.
No.
We have to regulate.
Right.
Now, the problem here, Ray, is children would say to me, I read parents and they go, oh, we have the phones in, they're in the on the bottom of the stairs, 10 o'clock, and they don't get anything after that. And there's a kind of a delight in the fact that they're able to do that, and fair play to them. It's the right thing to do. But the child will say, you can turn off my phone, but you can't turn off my brain. So I'm up in the room at 12 and 1 and 2 wondering what's being interacted on that device.
One girl in that documentary, Young and Troubled, referred to it as, if there's a bit of drama, if there's drama, then I could be up till 5 o'clock in the morning.
And there's drama all the time. That's the thing, that there's these pitch battles across, you know, whatever platform, Snapchat or whatever it might be. There's coalitions going on. Like, young people are not hanging out in physical spaces. They're hanging out, so our physical neighbourhoods have never been smaller and our virtual neighbourhoods have never been bigger.
Yeah.
So where all the stuff used to
be. It's not real interaction, though. It's virtual interaction.
It's virtual interaction, but that even makes it more cruel, and you know, the empathy is gone, the interactive the rules of interaction are almost less.
This is sort of a bigger thing, but do you fear for the effect this is going to have long term on this generation?
I do, because I think we don't get to know ourselves. I see young people today who have a crisis of identity. I don't know who I am. Coleman, tell me who I am. Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and all, everyone wants me to know who I am. I have to declare my identity, but I actually don't know. And this kind of insecurity. And I think what is wrong is that we have taken away the space that we used to have. So say, for example, our generation, I think we would have had loads of time just sitting on walls or going places, yes, that we had no other entertainment. So you got to know, who is Ray Darcy? What do I want to do? What do I want to be in my life?
And you were in groups hanging out. They were giving you hints as to who you were.
But for me, again, well, if you don't have that space, how do you ever get to know who you are, yeah, in that sense? Because you're always connected somewhere else. And I think, like, I know mindfulness is very popular and people are very fond of it, but I don't think we could have sold mindfulness in the 80s. You know, I don't think it would have been a thing, prescribing time by yourself. We had plenty of that. Yeah. You know, I think mindfulness is, yes, its popularity is because we live in a mindless culture.
Right.
And it's the mindlessness that I wonder, that's what I worry about for children's emotional health, that they don't get a sense of who they are, yeah, or they don't even get an opportunity. And it's, okay, not, sorry.
What's your advice? No, that's yeah, you know, it's worrying, but what's your advice to this parent?
I'd limit it, and I would face the detox.
Okay.
I would face the
because it's ugly, it can be ugly.
I had a parent a few years ago now, this who said to me, her child did something online she shouldn't have done, and mum said, I'm taking it off her for 2 weeks, right? I thought that was ambitious, but we said, go with it. And I got a phone call about a week later saying, she's unbearable, like this kid, she's punching walls, she's making the life unbearable, her younger siblings are terrified. And I said, look, you said 2 weeks, stick with it, but see how it goes. The second week I heard nothing, so I assumed she gave it back, and that was the peace of mind.
She didn't, though.
She didn't. And the Friday
the behavior changed.
Friday she saw me, the second week she said, I just want to say something before we go in. The second week I got my daughter back.
Yeah.
She said, we talked in the car. We went to a movie together and we had a conversation. She said, I haven't seen that girl since she was 11. And for me it was, wow, this is like the degree to which we, I'm not using an addictive issue, but the problematic relationships we form cause this uproar of, and if we're afraid of the detox, then we always have to keep giving it back. Advice.
Yeah.
So if your child was a heroin addict, for the point of view of that, you wouldn't keep giving them the thing that's causing them harm just because you didn't, yeah, want the outburst. I would say, stick out the outburst and see how it goes.
Okay. You're the adult, somebody says. You'll be the bad guy, but you have to take the phone out of the bedroom. Stop it before it goes further. Yes, they meet friends online now, but 2 a.m., you need boundaries. Be the adult. Let them do the detox. It'll be murder, but worth it. That's sort of what you were saying there. Now, there's another one there on phones. We'll leave that for the moment because we've spoken a lot about phones. I'm a separated dad, and my ex-wife is using my daughter to get at me. She never puts any of the clothes on that I buy for my child, limits the time I spend with my child, claiming the child needs rest at the weekends. She is due to be with me and never contributes to the drop-off, pick-up of our child. I've asked numerous times for us to meet a third party, but she says no, and then claims that all of her friends consistently tell her that she's in the right with the way she deals with me through the child. How can I coerce, in inverted commas, her to use mediation. I'm reluctant to cut or withhold the maintenance payments as this would be in breach of our divorce. So he wants a third party. He wants to go to a counsellor on this or mediation.
I'm glad this has come up. I think this is a real issue. I think the role of dads has changed in Irish society. We see far more dads pushing buggies than we ever would have done 10 years ago. I'm not sure the law has moved in that way. You know, still kind of every Wednesday and second weekend, that sort of stuff. There's a lot of dads out there who really want to spend time with their children, who really want that. And similar to, I think, maybe a query we had the last time, this is an example of the pawn of the child being used to sling mud at another partner. And unfortunately, that is uberly common as well. But from the point of view of this man, there's a few flaws in this, and I'm going to take a side on this because I'm for the dad in this situation.
We're only getting his version of events.
Yeah, of course. But the issue is there's no reason why the child can't rest with him. You know, so there's that. I'm not so sure that argument stands up. When mum is saying that she's getting all the advice that her friends are telling she's doing the right thing, that's essentially an echo chamber because you're only asking people who will more or less agree with you in what you're doing. Mediation is required. I'm not entirely sure why there isn't I suppose, some ring-fenced arrangement around what needs to happen. And if mum isn't living up to that, in the same way as dad's worried about if he withdraws the maintenance pension, I don't think that's the right idea. I think you're getting into mudslinging to match mudslinging. But from the point of view of his... There should have been an arrangement that the child goes to see. That now, if the child is saying, I don't want to see dad, then that has to be considered and taken into account. But where mum is making the decision for the child, that the child is too tired, and the issues with pickups and drop-offs, there must be some recourseable avenue for him to kind of say that this isn't what we arranged, or this isn't what we...
Do you, in your work, deal with a lot of children of separated parents and divorced parents?
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of parents. I'd always... bounce that by say a lot. I see a lot of kids with parents who are together too.
Too, yes. Yes,
but of
yes.
course, there's a massive issue around. And for me, it's the young person. The major issue I see with young people of separated parents is guilt. And it's when I'm with dad, I'm worried about mom and how mom is feeling about me being with dad. And then when I'm with mom, I'm worried about how my dad is feeling. And, you know, and again, you'll find that, you know, children are kind of, maybe they're with their dad and they're texting back to mom, are you okay? And is everything all right? And then they maybe go with mom
the opposite,
and they're texting
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's this idea of how do I get this right in terms of, but I have to say, I've seen a lot more parents who've managed separation arrangements so much better in recent years. People seem to get that actually we can't use children in this, and we have to have them as a priority and park our own stuff. And where that is done, I see it done brilliantly.
Okay, and so how he reckons the need mediation. How is he going to get his ex to go to mediation?
I wouldn't be au fait with the legalities of that in terms of how what form of recourse, but I'm guessing there's an arrangement being made. And if that arrangement has been made formally, then he can go back to that and say, look, this isn't what we agreed to, even if there was an original mediation role in the first instance.
And he can always say that he heard this on the radio and that we shouldn't be using our children as pawns.
Absolutely. There's no winner in that.
Yeah.
I've never seen that have a good outcome.
Dear Coleman, I have an 8-year-old boy who suffers anxiety as a result of bullying in the past. He hates closed doors, lifts, crowds, etc. And I don't know how to work it with it or him. Any help, please? That's Paul.
Yeah, again, that 8-year-old kind of latency age child is very common to have kind of develop a phobic stuff. And children who maybe have a fear of death, they might have a fear of animals, they may have a fear of bees, they have a fear of... And it's kind of the anxiety of that age can oftentimes attach to one thing. So it becomes displaced into a kind of a manageable fear. So if I just avoid lifts and then avoid elevators or whatever it might be, then my anxiety can be contained. Okay. So it's in some ways it's a kind of a psychological defense mechanism to place it into that. If there hasn't been an experience or an adverse experience around these things, then it seems like that's what this is. This little boy has suffered from bullying in the past. It's a phenomenal amount of young people that I see are victims of bullying. I would say, Ray, it's close on 85% of young people that I'd see would report bullying of some description. It is incredibly toxic in terms of attacking a child's self-esteem and all those sorts of things. This lad's only 8, so you really have an opportunity to do something to not allow that continue through his whole schooling career. I would be looking to see is there other anxieties at play here that maybe focusing on the lifts and that might almost over-pathologize that in some respects. I would be trying to see, is he worried about uncertainty? Is he worried about the bullying reoccurring? Because even if it's not happening at the moment, the threat that it might happen at any time can cause children to hold a lot of anxiety they can't manage. And it's really hard to express anxiety about something that's not happening.
Is it possible that this parent is, you know, connecting the bullying to the anxiety about the doors and they may not be connected?
They may not, absolutely not.
Is it not that at that, as you said at the beginning, that an 8-year-old goes through that phase? It's part of growing up.
Yeah.
That there's an anxious phase.
It could be absolutely separate.
Yes.
From the point of view of children who aren't bullied may have these experiences
of fears and phobias
and those sorts of things. My sense of that in that age group is to acknowledge it and look for just to how much impact is it having on the child's functioning. So if it's having a major impact, then perhaps it's something you actually need to do something about. But it wouldn't seem to be in terms of this. I would try and just dilute the intensity of it. But given that there's a background to bullying in this boy's case, any child who I would have if any parent is out there has a suspect that their child is being bullied, I would do something about it. I would have a path worn to the school in terms of trying to get on top of it. Okay. I would not stop at any level to try and make sure it doesn't happen or isn't happening, because the corrosive effects of it are massive.
That psychologist is brilliant. So lovely to hear someone natural, easy to listen to, with sound advice and not just taken from a textbook. Can't wait for next session, says Celine. My 20-year-old still won't eat vegetables, sorry to say, says that person. So there.
Well, we're saying that adolescence is stretched to 25 now, so maybe in 5 years' time.
Colm and Ogden, thanks very much. And if you have any questions for Colm, we will be back in the coming weeks. ray@rte.ie. That's it from us. Mary Wilson's on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.